It's an awkward sandwich. Well, it's a sandwich in which the bread is awkward.
Please bless the refreshments to give us strength in our bodies.
Hello and welcome to Bless the Refreshments, where normal people have normal conversations about the gospel, making it way more fun and interesting to be a member of the church. This week, we're taking on the trendy summer challenge, NGL. For those of you who have no idea what the heck we're talking about, NGL stands for Not Gonna Lie, where our Instagram followers could ask us any question they wanted anonymously. We started this challenge before we recorded our first episode, and we thought we'd get a couple of questions. And you guys responded. So much so that we had to make it a standalone episode. Questions ranged from our opinions on Harry Potter, whether or not we'll make our kids serve missions, asked our extremely unqualified advice post-divorce, and even some suggesting changes to who hosts the podcast. It's a great episode, and we hope you enjoy.
Yes, we can just start. Have we already begun? Yeah, I don't remember how to start stuff, man. I'm still rusty. Week two back from the hiatus, and yeah, I'm still not there yet. We got so many responses to our NGL on Facebook within 24 hours that we wanted to make it a whole episode, because I think there are some really good points here. There are some great questions here, guys. I'm really excited about
that. We will answer awkwardly.
I'm still in shock that we have fans that like interact with us.
I am. I'm happy about that. Like, guys, thank you so much for being involved here. Sorry you had to wait an extra week. But again, we wanted to cover all of the questions. Burgess and Tyson have not seen this. I'm the one that generally posts on the Instagrams. Even though sometimes Tyson does it because I forget to sometimes. Do you have any last words before you participate in your first NGL, guys?
I'm not going to participate in your gotcha questions, Johnny. I don't like not having things beforehand.
Okay, NGL questions. If this were a YouTube medium, it might be this actually would have been better, like a better live, but we're not there yet, guys. Too much editing goes into this to make it good.
I think he just insulted us.
I'm insulting me just as much as anyone
else. It's too much editing for this to be good.
All right, guys. Are you ready for the first question? This person says, I really don't care to be mentioned, but we're mentioning you anyways, because it was really nice. But I've really appreciated what you utensils have been doing. Okay, that's where I didn't appreciate
it. I appreciate
whoever you are, you're dead to me.
Silent. But
you can tell that this person is an actual listener, because right. You haven't brought that up for about 20 episodes.
No, yeah. After my wife said, you need to stop doing that, it's stupid, I stopped doing it.
I've almost listened to all of your episodes. I'm currently on episode 55. I know, but it's been a huge testimony builder and have helped me on my faith journey as well as I listen to you on my drive to work.
Wow.
That's really nice.
Yeah. There's not many nicer things you can say than that, you know?
Yeah.
That's really special.
That's great.
55 is our April 2022 General Conference Fantasy Draft.
Hey. Oh, that one got kind of heated too.
Yeah, it did.
The odds of landing on a fantasy draft are pretty high.
It's true.
It's about 1 in 5.
Yeah.
Well, to whoever left this one, thank you very much.
Yeah, very appreciated. That was awesome.
So here's our actual first NGO, well, our second NGO. Yeah, it's a big one, right? So how do you work past the dark history that the church has, as well as parts of current culture where many people are not supported or welcomed in the church? For example, LGBTQ people, victims of abuse, those questioning the church. But how do you guys react to this?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard because none of us fall into those categories. So it's hard. Like in my personal thing is that I believe that specifically the three categories of people that he mentioned, LGBTQ, the victims of abuse, and questioning the church are welcome in the church. I can understand how it feels painful in a lot of ways. Like, I don't want to invalidate that at all. Me, if I personally welcome them into the church, like, I think there's plenty of room for all of them. I think I think the church is the best place for, you know, for everybody, including these groups of people. As far as the dark history, I think that's kind of a, I honestly just think that's a little bit of an overstatement. There are dark parts. There are terrible mistakes made by prophets, leaders, whatever. Like, there are lots of mistakes being made, but you're not going to find any organization where that's not. And I understand that, like, it's hard to accept a church we claim direct revelation. We're the only church, you know, true church on earth. We're Christ Church. So it's hard to accept terrible mistakes done by either the church as an organization or people within it that on a very public scale. But I don't know. I guess to me, saying dark history is kind of an over-exaggeration. I work past it because it happened, and there's really nothing else to say. Like, it happened, and we're here now. We're much better than we used to be.
So here's an interesting thing. I read a lot of church history, and I love it. I really do love it. And I try and embrace all the parts of the history that I read and try and apply it to my own kind of spiritual walk and understanding. So it's interesting that the church has a parallel to individuals as they strive to, you know, progress through this life to exaltation. The church has made some mistakes in the past, and there's going to be mistakes in the future. That's part of life. Yeah, I agree that, you know, coining the church's history dark compared to what? Right. I think without kind of a context of, you know, I think there's the tendency to expect something in the church that's squeaky clean, that a standard that would not be held to any other person or organization. I think there's great lessons to be learned, you know, whether you're talking about the lost manuscript, you know, as an example, you know, that a lot of mistakes were made, a lot of character flaws were exposed, a lot of things were taken from us that we may never get back in any proximate timetable. You know, several people left the church for selfish reasons. Oliver Cowdery was one of them, came back. And that was, you know, that's something that can happen to each of us if we're not careful. There's been policies in the church that are questionable. And some of them that are, you know, that were abhorrible, but were actually commonplace in the time that they happened, right? And so that context is often not, you know, explained. Not saying it's an excuse, I'm just saying, you know, there is a human tendency that is overlooked when we talk about those things. So I think that we have to give the church grace just like we all want grace for ourselves. And I kind of agree with Burgess that I think that, you know, we do have individuals who might be intolerant, but as a church, I think we're welcoming, you know, even to the people who we have doctrinal disagreements or, you know, differences of beliefs. And so I think we have to make that distinction. Just because we have a certain belief and that contradicts someone else's, you know, belief system, doesn't mean that we're not welcoming to that person. It just means we have a difference of opinion, of belief, whatever you want to say that. And I think we have to have those conversations with grace for each other. You know, I think we can be accepting, and I think we can still have our beliefs that we hold dear.
Yeah, I think it's really hard because we will never know all of the history and all of the context of what's been going on, of the dark history. And I'm not going to say that I think that dark history exists in any organization, like you said, Tyson, because man is inclined to evil, right? There are always going to be secret combinations. There are always going to be deals done in the dark. There are always going to be people being mistreated. And I know why that feels weird with the church, because we claim that it is, you know, our claim is that it's the only true and living church on the face of the earth. So ideally, it would be perfect because we have direct and divine revelation. But I don't think that's the way it works. We are going to get things wrong. How do I work past all of this? I try to not let it bother me, because if there are parts of, let's take the Mountain Meadow Massacre. Let's say it actually happened the way, you know, that Brigham Young organized this hit on these people.
Whoa. That, like, factual history, Brigham Young was not in any way connected to that.
Let's say that the church as an organization. And I'm not saying it did. I'm saying, let's say, hypothetically speaking, it did, right? In theory, if that were the case, the people held responsible will be held responsible for the wrong and the evil that they've done, right? Can leaders of the church be leaders of the church and do terrible things? Yeah, they can. And the Lord is using them for a very specific purpose to accomplish something in spite of their imperfections. I think now, in terms of current culture, I think that, I feel for people who feel marginalized in the church, who feel like they don't have a place, because that's an incredibly alienating feeling, especially when you have so much invested, your whole eternity rests in the balance here, you know? And so if you feel like you don't have a spot in the church because you're gay or because you're trans or because you're questioning the church or you're leaving the church or making a transition out of the church, I think that the imperfection parts of church culture in marginalizing these people, if that is what's happening, is due because we don't know, we feel discomfort. And I try to give people grace when they mistreat me. I feel like I've got a place at church because I'm a follower of Christ. And those questioning the church, I don't think are doing that because they want to just fight against something. They're really trying to do what's right. And I know that that makes other people feel uncomfortable, but I would say again, Elder Holland in his last talk said, don't come to the feast and don't leave, because you may not be sure about the broccoli, don't throw away everything because of certain things you don't know. And I would think that's my response to the whole thing.
I don't want to leave this question without, like, if you are having questions or you are having a hard time working past whatever concern that you have, I take it to the Lord. That's how you're going to feel welcome in the church, is if when you take it to the Lord. He'll always welcome you, no matter what your ward or, whoever says. He'll welcome any question. My wife told God how much she hated him when she was going through her darkest days, and now she has one of the strongest testimonies that I've ever witnessed. But it all started from her saying, "I hate you, and why would you make me go through this?" If you're having a hard time working past the stuff, take it straight to the Lord.
It's much easier for me to view my circumstance and what I go through the Lord's lens or through an eternal lens if I am trying to look at the people around me, whether they're mistreating me or not, as children of God. And if I can do that, if I can look and see their value, it's easier for me to see an eternal perspective and to find avenues to make peace with the questions or concerns that I might have. So I think part of it is just going through that process of trying to be Christ-like. And once you do that, the answers, I think, come more easily. The Spirit can rest more fully upon you, and you're able to open your mind and your heart to understanding.
I think if you try to put yourself in the other person's position, whereas, again, I was having lunch with someone the other day who's quite close to me, and they were saying, I feel like the leaders of the church are working against me and what I'm trying to accomplish in life, which is inclusivity and all this stuff. And I was like, I don't agree completely with you, but I was like, I understand now how you feel. If that were the case, I would understand why I would have a hard time going to church or watching General Conference if I believed that. But again, on the other hand, if you're the person who's questioning the church, saying, it's hard for me to be around these people who make you feel, you know, like what you're doing is you're exposing people to people questioning, you know, why you feel so committed to something that they feel is wrong, you know? And so if you can look at it from their perspective, even if you don't agree, you can say, oh, okay, I understand why this makes you uncomfortable on both sides. And I thought that was a very helpful experience for me, at least. How do we work past it? How do we work past all this stuff? Imperfectly. Anything else from this question? Great, great heavy question to start off. I thought this was good. Yeah. Okay. This is also a good one and a hard one because none of us can relate. How do I just start dating after divorce? I'm terrified.
Yeah, I would be too.
Right? Yeah, for sure.
So I can't relate to this. I did. My father did. So my mom died when I was 16 years old. And so my dad dated after that, got married again, then got divorced, and then went through kind of the whole process over again. And watching him go through that experience was very interesting to me. One, made me never want to go through it, right? Because it's it's hard to, whether it's a divorce or your spouse dies, like a part of you that you kind of, you know, relied on is now, you know, either gone or has moved on to another sphere. It's the hardest thing in the world, especially like if you've got kids, you know, that's incredibly hard, right?
Yeah.
And so there's no easy way to go about it, but I did see with my dad, even through, and his divorce, in my opinion, was pretty hard. His wife, in my opinion, was abusive to him. And so I think that, you know, there can be really hard feelings if that's like the case, right? But even in those kind of bad circumstances, my dad always had a good attitude and he was always kind to the other people. Now, I think, you know, later on, he did more take his time. The first time he started dating again, it was at the, you know, someone kind of set him up, right? And so if I was to give someone advice, just don't let people set you up. I actually mean that. Like, yeah. So I think people that want to set you up mean well, but they often don't have any idea what you're looking for. Right. So rule number one, don't let anyone set you up.
That's funny. I've actually been talking to someone who is going through a divorce, and he said he wants to rely on referrals. Like I was like, oh wow.
I think referrals are fine. So that's actually a really good distinction, though. So there's a difference between someone saying you need to date this person, and between like that's I know true. This person, yeah. And I'm, you know, you're asking my opinion, and I think they're a good person. I think that's incredibly useful. You know, just like having someone who knows that person well to kind of give you some perspective. Yep. But playing matchmaker to me is kind of a different thing.
Burgess, what do you think?
I have no idea. I'm sorry. Like, I don't feel like I have any advice for you because that sounds terrifying to me too. And I don't like doing terrifying things. I would just say like with lots of prayer and
yeah,
you know, like find a really good support system. I wish I could tell you something that would make it easy, but I'll be honest, like I don't have any advice and it sounds terrifying.
Yep.
So
yep, I agree. I would say that my advice that I think I would give this person could be absolute trash because I would be a terrible dater right now. Oh man, I would hate it so much. I think that, so, and I'm going to do this in a way that might discredit me. I'm going to do it from two movies two media sources. One is from TV. The other one is film. The first one
question. Just stop. Just stop.
No, we're not going to mention The Good Place here.
It's not The Good Place. Call.
Yeah, you have to die place. First and then you can start.
I
dating.
Had to go on a different podcast to talk about The Good Place for more than 2 seconds. The first one is actually from Glee. So, but it's
you're not
but,
helping but your it really, case, really, Johnny.
No, I know. But listen, so the main character is in a typical Hollywood set, terrible marriage, right? And he starts, you know, he's faithful to his wife, but he starts flirting with another lady on the side. Everyone's rooting for the other two to get together. Will Schuster, the main character, finally gets divorced and he's ready to start dating Mrs. Pillsbury. However, he jumps right into it and he starts like saying, he's like, oh yeah, like he's like start listening to the same songs that he and his ex-wife used to listen to, and it obviously does not go over well. And she's like, look, you're trying to fill what you had with me, basically just like plug and play me into your old relationship. And I think that was actually pretty sound advice, where it's like, hey, you need time to come up with your own identity first. That might not be some bad advice. Take some time to come up with, to evolve into who you are before you start dating again. The second piece of this, the movie that I was thinking about is from Cool Runnings. And there's a part where Darius Banik, the driver, is talking to his coach the night before the third race. And he wants to, Darius wants to know why his coach cheated in the Olympics. And he's like, well, when you have the I wanted the gold medal so badly that I would have done anything. And he's like, if you're not enough without it, then you'll never be enough with it. And I'm like, whoa. So that one blew my mind. So I think that, you know, like, take the time that you need. If you're ready now, then go for it now. But if you're saying, hey, I'm not going to be enough until I'm married again, I hope that you would find your own value, whether or not marriage happens again in your future. Again, this advice could be utter trash, but that's what I would say.
To your statement, Johnny, I think finding a way to heal, right? So yeah. I'll go back to my dad just real quick. When he got divorced, he started, this wasn't anything crazy, but every day he would go walk around the high school track. He never said this to me, but what I feel like is that that was therapeutic for him. He could start to, you know, kind of come to terms with his thoughts and emotions, and he was able to kind of, you know, sort those things out in that time alone. Everyone's going to do that a little bit differently, but find a way to kind of, you know, work through those feelings and those emotions that you're having so that you can allow that healing to take place. I think that's a healthy thing.
Great. I like it. Okay, here's our next one. This is a good one. And I think that this week we might take this one offline a little bit. But this person said, love the podcast. Would you ever invite a woman to be a full-time contributor? Feels like there's a heavy male perspective, obviously, and that there's that, and that some episodes have missed the mark, or at least some of it because of that. Adding a woman contributor could make for interesting content and conversations.
Here's the thing. I think she's got a great point. So we have had women on the show, and always has been better with women on the show than without the show. So
I agree.
I think she's got a point. I guess it comes to who is that person.
Yeah, maybe we hold auditions. Just laughs. Why do you laugh?
I 100% agree that, yeah, like this is, I mean, that's what this podcast is, right? It's like our three perspectives, right? So like, I don't disagree that we've missed the mark on some things, and like, cause kind of that's, I feel like that's what's going to happen. Cause I mean, we're three buddies just doing a podcast, you know? Yeah. So like, I don't disagree with this at all. And I would love to have, I think it would have to be one of our wives. One of the reasons I love coming on the podcast that like, because you guys are my friends. And I feel like I can be a lot more real and genuine. And I feel like I could be real and genuine with either one of, like, even if one of your wives was listening as well, or like contributing as well, and mine. So like,
we could, but I think that it would, for one, if it was just one of our wives, it would be strange, right?
Right. Yeah.
I think that this opens up a lot of different options in terms of production. Cause I was thinking, I think I like three. I think three is a good number for an episode because I feel like this may not be true. I think I talk a lot over Burgess. I think a common sentiment is Burgess needs to talk more. Like we want to hear more Burgess. So I think that four, I think not we might happen. Be crowding. It might be a time for a crowd, but I was thinking, what if we had like a couple of women who we all rotate episodes?
Here's the thing. Just
spitballing here.
Yeah, but, here's the thing. Like,
but I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, and I think that is an interesting idea, and I think that is a very, very good point. In the long run, like this podcast is exactly what the intro says. Like we're three guys just talking about the church, like talking mm-hmm. about certain topics, and we're bringing our perspectives, which take it or leave it is the it is really what it is. Like not to like I don't want to. Hopefully that's not insulting.
Right. Or anything. No, you're totally right though, Burgess.
Right, because it's exactly right. Like it's not going to have we're going to miss the mark totally. But
we're not a podcast for like we're not trying to be like the I mean, you shouldn't listen to any other podcasts, right?
Right. Well, we established that in the last episode, right? Jeez.
but
you shouldn't listen to any other podcasts.
We're not the like quintessential podcast for everyone, right? We're just doing what we do. But what we could do on occasion is there a girls like a trio of girls podcast out there that we could like have a battle with? Is that like
a battle with like a rap battle? Yeah, we're just gonna a talking battle at it because
yes.
we're
not
a
rap. We're That's just now a
podcasting battle. That would be. I mean, yeah, right? Three women should do a companion show. I would love that. That would be great. Yeah. Or again, I think that it would if we were in a growth mindset. I would say, hey. You know, our hiatus was indication that this is like every week forever is probably likely not a sustainable model. Right. So if we were in a growth mindset, I would say, hey, let's expand the cast. And that way we don't have to be involved in production every week. I think that would be an advantage again. Plus, I think that more voices would offer a fresh perspective, which I think would be cool.
Yeah.
Send your demo tapes to burgesscaulfield@gmail.com.
Yes.
And we'll get on that for sure. If you're interested in participating, send us an email for sure. Yeah. Again, not promising that anything will happen to it. If you want to come on for a single episode, or again, if we were in a growth mindset,
and anytime we miss the mark, comment, tell us, correct us every time.
For sure.
Like we are more than welcome to it.
That's what the internet is meant for, right?
Like do it. Yeah.
yeah, for sure. And I think we obviously miss the mark of men's perspective too, because we don't represent all men, right? If you could, what would be cool is if you could record something on your phone and email it to us. We'll play it and then respond like this. Are we ready? Let's move on. If that's okay. Next one. Okay. Interesting one. Would you rather be able to fly, breathe underwater, or have invisibility?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Because I used to always say fly. Like if somebody has superpowers, because I love traveling, but I hate airports. So I would love to fly for that reason. But honestly, I love scuba diving. So I think I would breathe underwater. I think that would be my choice.
Well, I'm a host on a podcast, so I'm already invisible, right? So, yeah, I'd want to fly. I feel like there's a song about that.
By the most reputable man ever. Right? So here's the question. Any of these alone are terrible. Because if you can only fly, you also need super speed. Because if you're flying, you know, like you're just flying as fast as you can run. Can you also breathe at high altitudes? Breathing underwater. There's a point where you can't, where your body can't sustain the pressure, the water pressure. So you're going to get crushed. And invisibility. Do you have to be naked when you're invisible? Or if you go invisible, do your clothes also going to go invisible?
Okay, this question is evolving very
Christmas. These are superpowers, dude.
I'm in the weeds. If your clothes would go with you, if you could make like anything you touched, well, that's attached to you, could go invisible. I think I would say invisibility. Actually, I think to be an animagus would be the best.
Donnie cheated on this question, by the way.
Yeah,
how did true. I cheat?
You didn't answer it. You said animagus.
I said if your clothes could come with, like, if clothes would go invisible as well, then I would say invisibility.
Wow.
But
Johnny needs caveats to these answers.
Anytime we're overthinking something, we got to say animagus.
You know, I think you guys are underthinking it. The ramifications. All right. Okay. Next question. Yes. Here we go. Will you let your kids choose whether or not to serve a mission?
Yeah. 100%. Yes. I understand the question, but in our family, it's not a question. It's yes.
Yeah.
They will absolutely choose, and we will respect the choice, and we will educate them either way. Like, and we'll love them either way.
I agree.
So 100%. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm already facing this right now. My little girl does not want to be baptized. She is deathly scared of putting her face in the water. And I'm not going to make her do it. Yeah. Like Burgess said, I mean, we're going to continue to testify of the truth, and we're going to continue to, have the gospel in our home and do those things that encourage her to, feel the Spirit and someday have a desire to overcome that fear to be, because I don't think she has any objection to being baptized minus the water. But yeah, no, I think you have to make that choice. So I was at a baptism one time, and the person getting baptized had a similar thing as what my daughter's going through, in the sense that very scared of the water. But this was not worked out ahead of time. This was happening in the font.
Oh, no.
Everything worked out okay, but like this was not comfortable. And
a tremendous amount of pressure for sure. And
there's a possibility. I haven't talked to this person. This was a long time ago, but I haven't talked to this person about how they look back on this experience. But kind of my mindset, I don't want that to be a bad experience. Like, I don't want that to be a painful experience you look back on. And like, when a baptism should be a wonderful thing, just like a mission should be a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think that you need to allow that person to come to that conclusion on their own. I think you could be a good influence on that, right? I think that you can allow yourself to be an example, right? Because I think we don't put enough emphasis on that part of, or the part we play in the gospel, which is primarily being an example. And so I encourage anyone to go on a mission, but would I force anyone to go on a mission? I wouldn't. God doesn't force anyone to do anything, And so I know that there's valid reasons why we feel like we have to do that sometimes, but I try and resist it personally.
Yeah. I mean, you literally can't make your kids go on a mission. And I don't think that you should. I think that obedience should be a choice always. Particularly when you are at when you're at mission age. Particularly if a mission goes poorly, I don't want them to look back and be like, "Look, Dad, this is your fault." You know, like, mission is going to be hard, and there are going to be times where you're going to feel like you can't go on, or you feel so bad about yourself. But one thing that I always knew is that I was like, "Okay, I'm committed to this. I can do this. I want my kids to go on a mission because they love the Lord and because they want to." They want to do something hard and challenging, and they're eager to do that. So,
It's interesting. The mission thing, the one thing you didn't mention, Johnny, is there's sometimes in saturated, member cultures, there's a fear of social acceptance.
Right? Yeah.
And so I think, just as a people, we kind of have to be sensitive to that.
For sure.
I certainly don't want someone going for that reason. Right.
Okay. Good one. All right. Next one. Yeah. This is an interesting one too. This person said, "We just moved out of Utah and I couldn't be happier. I really don't like the culture there. I think it's a Utah problem and not a church problem I had a couple of buddies that were talking about Utahns were very judgmental, and I don't know if I took an exception to it because I am a Utahn. Do I think that we have problems here? Yeah, for sure. But I don't think that Utah or the church have cornered the market on judgmental people. I understand where this person could be coming from. That hasn't been my experience, so it's hard for me to address it.
Burgess, is this why you were trying to move back to Pittsburgh?
Totally. I was completely running away from all
this
the
This is
Utahns.
The question that he submitted.
Yeah, this is mine. Sorry.
Assuming that he had actually moved to Pittsburgh. Right.
Yeah, I prematurely submitted it.
Okay. So here's the thing. They say they moved out and they're happy. That's great.
Yeah, great.
I'm glad you found someplace you're happy. Not every place is everyone's cup of tea, right? Where you live to me is an important thing. You know, so I mean, we had I've related it before on a previous episode, the way that we settled on the place that we live now. And it was a really good experience. And I think we all have different temperaments, you know, we all have different things that we value. And we don't all have to live in Utah. One of the things about Utah I think is interesting, and I think this is true about a lot of places, is that the culture in Utah is not monolithic. And so you can get into a pocket of this or that in Utah or anywhere else. And it's very distinct from other things, other, you know, subcultures within geographies. So
I've felt the same way before when we first moved to Utah, not like when we were lived in Bountiful, like we lived in Utah, got married, then left. So the first time we were here, we felt that same way. Coming back, we really didn't. I really loved our cul-de-sac where we met. It's like, I felt very welcome there. And I think hopefully everybody felt welcome. So like, but like, I think Tyson hit it on the head. It's like, I didn't like it. There's nothing wrong with not liking it here. And I'm glad they're happy wherever they are.
Okay. Next one. Very hard hitting question. Popsicle or ice cream?
It's not a question.
Let's make it a...
This isn't a question.
Is it not a question? Because it's not... It doesn't start with an interrogative...
It ends with a question mark.
That's just a question mark?
It does end with a question
mark. Are you saying that...
It's obvious.
It's not a question because you prefer one... Strongly prefer one or the other.
I'm saying if you breathe, you prefer one. Ice cream?
Yeah, me too. I
would say as a whole, yes. Yeah. Though I like, have had some dang good popsicles.
I don't think I've ever had a real dang good popsicle. I think I've had a popsicle that was satisfying in the heat, but I've had some really good ice cream.
Yeah.
So I had a melon flavored popsicle. Overall ice cream, consensus. I like it. Okay, next one. Is there anything that would break your faith or testimony? If not, how do you know it's not just cognitive dissonance?
Can somebody give a definition of cognitive dissonance?
my AP psychology teacher said explained it this way, and he said that he had two friends, and they're like, yeah, who are dating, and they're like, hey, we're gonna wait till we're married to have sex. He's like, eventually they had sex before they got married, and they were talking to him about that decision, and they're like, yeah, we decided that it would be better. And he's like, did you decide that before or after you had sex? You know? If they decided after, that's aligning they're trying to resolve that cognitive dissonance. So it would be interesting to me to see this person's, like, what kind of cognitive dissonance are they talking about here? But again, the first question is simple. Is there anything that would break your testimony or your faith?
It's hard because, like, this is very hypothetical, and like, I'm human just like everybody else, and I'm gonna leave it open, but here's why I'm saying no very confidently. There are certain things that I feel like I know and have gone beyond belief. Like, I know in testimony, meaning everybody stands up and say, I know this, I know that. And it's more just like, I believe this, I believe that.
Yeah, sure.
Which is fine. Like, I don't want to discredit that, but like, there are a couple things that I feel like I know and I have gone beyond belief of. One of those things is that the Book of Mormon is true, that the scriptures are the word of God. Another one is that I know that God exists. I feel like I've seen his hand. Those two things, for me, I cannot picture a situation that would break me of those testimonies. Like, I feel like it's, even though like it wasn't something that I actually saw, my experience was so strong that I feel like I actually saw it and I can't unsee it. I don't see anything that would break me of that testimony.
Nice. Tyson.
The way that I'm going to approach this question is there anything that can break me? And I'm going to say that yes, there probably is something. But I think we have to remember that your Heavenly Father is not trying to break you. He's trying to build you, right? So do I think that there's things that we're going to be challenged with? I do, but I think there, it's, you know, think of it as like a weightlifter, you know? You're not going to start out with something, you know, some amount of weight that you're trying to bench press that's going to be so heavy, it's just going to come down and break your neck. You get built slowly over time, and but you still are pushing yourself, right? In this case, you know, our earthly experience is designed so that we'll be able to build those muscles and resist the things that will come over time. We learned a couple of conferences ago that sequence is very important. And so I like to look at it in that way. I'm sure if Heavenly Father wanted to break me, He could. Like, I'm not going to put myself up on a pedestal to say there's absolutely nothing that could break me. But my faith is that He is trying to build me up. And so that ultimately I'll be able to withstand all things, but I can't do it all at once. You know, so I think we have to be vigilant about those things. But, and I think too, we have to view our challenges as things that we can overcome, right? I think we have to say that these things are coming in a sequence that can build me up and not break me, right? Sure. But is there something in the universe? I'm sure there is.
Yeah. You know,
I'm not all powerful. So, and as far as the cognitive dissonance goes, this is of, you know, this secret is kept by those who know, right? There's no words I can use to say how you know, but I will tell you, when the God of the universe speaks to your soul, you know it. I don't think there's anything that can take away from that knowledge other than your own disbelief. But I think if you're open to that experience, it will happen. I think it just takes patience and work.
I agree. I think that there is something in the world that can break me. But I think my, like, the immediate threat to my testimony, and will always be, is apathy and laziness. I think if there's something that is going to take me away from the church, it's going to be laziness. Like, I think that you bring up, you know, working out and weightlifting and, you know, and pushing yourself, all things I don't like. I went to the gym this morning and I hated almost every minute of it. But I think that that's the most immediate threat to my faith is apathy and laziness. Cognitive dissonance. How do I deal with the cognitive dissonance, I think, is an interesting thing, because I think the more I've embraced the idea, no, I guess the more I've embraced the idea of I will never have all of the answers, and if I wait till I have all of the answers, I will never move, ever. And that's a lesson that I think life has taught me, and ultimately God has taught me, that if I wait for God to give me every answer before I move forward, I'm never going to move anywhere. So I think that letting go of my need to align everything perfectly with what I believe, with what I'm doing, is impossible. There's always going to be something that's going to make me a little uncomfortable. But if I let that derail me, then I think that I'll be throwing the baby out with the bathwater. That's an interesting question. I like that one.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on. Burgess, this is the only one. I think you're the only one that get. Why is Philly so much better than the Berg, meaning the Pittsburgh?
Yeah. First of all, Philly is just New York's ugly stepchild. So I'm not sure what the logic is in this.
The Liberty Bell, bro.
Liberty Bell's broken. It's not. I mean, name one thing that Philly does better than Pittsburgh.
Boxing.
Cheesesteaks.
Both, if you're in the food category, no, sorry, Permane Brothers is better than any cheesesteak in Philly. I mean, if and you want to talk, I mean, you can bring
pierogies
are better in, yeah, Pittsburgh. Not Pittsburgh eats 9 times more pierogies than anywhere else in the country. Anyway, you want to bring sports? We can bring sports into the equation if you want.
Philly's got Rocky Balboa statue.
Rocky lost too. That's the thing. It's like Philly celebrates almost winning. Hey, he tried so hard. Pirates have more World Series. Penguins have more Stanley Cups. Steelers have more Super Bowls.
What? But they'll never have Rocky.
Right. Well, we don't like losers is the problem. So Philly, you can keep Rocky. Like we'll take the championships.
This is where I wish this were a video medium, because looking at Purchase's reaction is classic. Thank you to whoever submitted this question. That's awesome. Next one. Harry Potter, the devil's work.
I love Wait a minute. This question. Are we supposed to awesome. choose one or the other? Is that how the sentence do you prefer, is structured?
Harry Potter or the devil's work? I think the implication is, do you think Harry Potter is the work of the devil?
No.
No, please. Of course not. But I thought this question was hilarious. I am currently reading with my daughter Order of the Phoenix right now.
I don't think Harry Potter is the devil's work, but I still I was fresh off my mission when these movies started coming out. I still like, they're fine. I'm just not like a devotee, I guess, but I'm
the movies are not good.
I liked Goblet of Fire and I liked Goblet of Fire on. I thought 1, 2, and 3 were not great.
Half-Blood Prince has some incredible cinematography. Mm-hmm. It's great cinematography. And the shadow puppet vision or storytelling in Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite sequence of any of the movies. But
that was great.
So the thing about Harry Potter is I did not read the books. I love. Mm-hmm. But it took me a long time to get on board with them because everybody loved them. So I figured they must suck. You know, that's just the way
it's a safe assumption, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So if everybody likes something, I'm just going to assume that it sucks. So I didn't. But then one year, I made a New Year's resolution to read 6 books in the year. I figured I'm not a great reader. So I figured that I could do 1 book every 2 months. But then Amy made me promise that at least one of them be Harry Potter. So I just made the first one, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. And I was hooked immediately, right from the get-go. I love the world building in it. It's changed the way that I write. Now I love the books. Dobby is one of my favorite characters of all time. I cried on the bus reading his death scene.
Whoa, spoilers. Alert,
Dobby dies.
Just kidding.
So Harry Potter is wonderful.
And I'm reading the books. Goblet of Fire was really good. Okay, next one. I liked this one a lot too. When is anger ever justified and when is anger good? I'm going to go out on a ledge here. And I think this was submitted by Tyler Tolley, because I just listened to their episode about, they talked about anger. When is anger justified? And I thought that was interesting. What do you guys think?
So let me say this.
No.
Fine.
Okay, just kidding. Go. I will allow you.
Now, you have to have a very discerning spirit in order to be able to apply what I'm about to say. But I will say, anything you do when prompted by the spirit is good. And that can... inclusive of all emotions. Now, I will say that this is a very easy trap to get into if you don't have the experience to be able to recognize these things well. So that's okay. We all make mistakes, right? But I would say that, you know, Parley Pratt's account of Joseph Smith in prison, Silence Ye Fiends of the Infernal Pit would be an example. And I think that was completely justified anger. I mean, you could mince words and say, well, I don't think that was anger. He does describe him as being perfectly unruffled, for lack of a better term. And so, maybe we have to define what you mean by anger. But generally speaking, anything that you're doing in response to promptings of the Holy Ghost is good by definition.
This is something that I've worked with my therapist about a lot. Because when I feel myself getting angry, I normally will go, I won't process it at all. I'll go inside and not and basically just get frustrated by it. Like, I have a very strong instinct to push down anger. The word justified is weird to me. Like, does it, if we're using it as synonym for valid, I think it can be, I think anger can be validated a lot. I think there's a lot of valid reasons to be angry, but I think at the same time, my therapist always tells me that anger is a secondary emotion. There's normally something that is underneath it that is causing you to be angry. And he's also used a phrase that I love. There's a difference between being assertive and being aggressive, which I think would relate to what Joseph Smith did. It can be self-advocacy. You can assert yourself, to advocate for yourself if you need to, or advocate for somebody else, and to be assertive. It's when we get aggressive and stuff is when we can get into trouble. So I think like assertiveness and aggressiveness can be part of anger. And so like, when is anger good? I think that's, it feels like a loaded question, because learning about anger being a secondary emotion, when is anger good? It's good when we can notice it, learn from it, and figure out what's causing it.
Yeah. I think this is an interesting question, because we have a scripture that condemns anger, but I think that it goes a little bit deeper than that, right? I think anger is neither good nor bad. Well, I guess anger is good, because if you feel anger, then you know that there's something okay with your amygdala. Like, you're able to experience emotion. But, you know, I don't think anger is good or bad. I think anger is what you do with anger. Anger is a feeling, right? But I think it's how you act based on anger is what makes it good or bad. Right, is the outcomes, what makes the outcomes good or bad, right? I think that anger, there are certain emotions that when you experience, you are more susceptible to make bad decisions. I think shame is one of those emotions. I definitely think anger is an emotion that if you're not able to process it well, if you don't have the tools to really sit down and think and process it and then come up with a healthy reaction to whatever you're feeling anger towards, I think that it has the ability to lead you to make very bad decisions. I don't do well in the heat of anger, but I think it's good because it helps me ask questions of what is going on. But again, this confrontation that I had with my neighbor, he came and was very upset at me about something, and like everyone around me is like, oh, that guy's such a jerk. But I'm like, no, wait. This guy is just feeling like he's being taken advantage of by his neighbor. He's fighting for what he thinks is rightfully his. But he's, even though he's completely wrong, I get where he's coming from. I understand why he's acting like this. How he's acting is not productive, but and that's not how I would like to handle things. But again, I think that when you can really think about why you're angry, you can really learn some amazing things about yourself and about your situation. And I think that is good. Again, but acting upon anger, you just have to make sure that it's productive and that it's good rather than bad. So,
well, in that vein, I mean, one thing I guess I failed to mention too is that if God describes one of his attributes is anger, that's a good indication that it can be good, right? Often says, mine anger is kindled against the wicked, right? Or what have you. And so there obviously can be a godly way to be angry. Also, a commandment that we've been given is not to never be angry, but to be slow to anger, right? And a talk by that title has this interesting little tidbit. He says, as with most all strong emotions, anger is manifest both in righteousness and in unrighteousness. Righteous anger is an attribute of deity whose anger is everlastingly kindled against wickedness. Likewise, an inspired man might be led to speak or act in righteous anger, as did Moses when he broke the tablets upon which the Ten Commandments were written by the Lord. But to lose our temper, to explode, to become ugly, punitive, and hateful when faced with frustration is inexcusable.
I like that. That's good. Yeah. Wait, what talk is this? And who is it given by?
Called Be Slow to Anger. It's by Elder L. Ray L. Christensen. was an assistant to the 12. I don't know what year it is, but the title of the talk is Be Slow to Anger. It might also be an article. I can't tell. It's on the church's website.
I like that distinction a lot. That's great. Good question. I like it. Okay. I think we've only got a couple more. Does sending your kids to school induce anxiety, particularly around school shootings? Any tips to help? This person has had some panic attacks. They can't deal.
Can I answer this one, please?
No. Yeah, go for it.
Yes, it's very anxiety inducing, so much so that myself and my wife don't send our daughter to school. And so we homeschool our daughter for some of these reasons, right? Because we feel that there are some incidents, even though, like, I went to public school growing up, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think our public school system is great, especially the people running it are trying to do, you know, a really good job, I think. But we do live in an increasingly unstable world, and we've made the decision to homeschool our daughter for, you know, so that we can have more of an influence on the things that she's learning, specifically when we're talking about things in the gospel and connecting those to the things that she learns every day. So yeah, I think, now it's not for everyone, but I think that, you know, the anxiety can be reduced by inviting the Spirit to watch over and protect your family, to, you know, to have the gospel forefront in your home all the time, because we're all exposed to dangerous situations every day. And so I think that just seeking spiritual guidance from our Heavenly Father is the way to try and alleviate those concerns, especially when you're seeking instruction on what to do in your particular situation. Certainly feel free about having panic attacks. I don't have them personally, but I am a worrier.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those, I mean, I've got nothing but, you know, I feel nothing but sympathy for you for having to go through that. But I do think there's lots of avenues to deal with it. But for me, you know, seeking the Spirit, trying to know what Heavenly Father would have me do to protect my family is first and foremost. And then after that, I think there's lots of resources around that you can tap into, talk to different parents. You know, I think a lot of parents that I know have similar concerns and feelings and those types of things. And so I think just having community around it that allows us to kind of voice some of these things can help as well.
So we send our four kids to public school, and that anxiety is very common and it's very understandable. Like, so I would say you don't have to go through this anxiety alone. You know, hopefully there's a support group around you. You're getting to know your community would be best, because those are the other, probably a lot of your community is sending their kids to the same school. So that might be comforting. Mindfulness helps a lot with panic attacks, really just taking the time to notice, like if you know the panic attacks are coming on, really noticing what's happening in your body. You know, calling it what it is, you know, don't try to hide it. Don't run away from the panic. Really try to like notice it and really try to process it, you know? Cause it's not a bad thing. Like what's your anxiety isn't, it's a lot of times anxiety will come on. It's kind of almost as a survival tactic, you know? So like you really just need to it's just something that needs to be processed. You know, it's not something that's just going to go away on its own. So, yeah.
That anxiety, I think anxiety is sometimes kind of a stigmatized word. Like, oh, if you have anxiety, you don't have it together. You know, this anxiety is motivated by love, like by parental love, like the most pure love that you can experience. So, you know, like I would say that if you're feeling this anxiety, like that's okay. Like that's a good thing, you know? I think, and if sending your kids to public schools leads to panic attacks, if it's maladaptive to your well-being, don't send it to school. You know, if you can handle, I don't think that homeschooling is a bad option for those. To me, sending my kids to school worries me because there's always that chance, you know, what if a school shooting does happen? I'm trying to deal with the logic of the odds that a school shooting would happen at my kid's school is astronomically low, but that still doesn't totally help. But again, that anxiety is completely warranted if, you know, like it's completely understandable. And, you know, I think Burgess has some great tips. Mindfulness, if you want to send your kids to public school to deal with that anxiety, working it out with a therapist, I think would be great. And yeah, I think we're done. I think that's it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was it.
Hey.
Good questions, guys. That was a great. I'm glad that we gave them. I'm glad that we gave every. Oh, there was an Instagram question, though, that was not anonymous. That it is. This is from Baboy, who is his name is Victor Tafui. He's a good dude. He asked us, do you guys ever get hate from anyone on social media or is a result of the show? And he said, if you do, it's probably because they haven't listened. Have you guys gotten any negative feedback about doing the show or about show's contents or just being available, like even just on social media itself?
I wouldn't say negative. I mean, there's always someone that's going to have a difference of opinion. I think that's just, you know, part of, you know, putting something out there. But yeah, I wouldn't say negative. Certainly, we've had some dissenting opinions online. Stuff I may or may not agree with, right? So
yeah,
but I would encourage more of it because I think you know, given topics and opinions, oxygen is the best way to figure things out yourself. So I would encourage more interaction, and I don't care how negative it is.
Yeah. $10 to the first person to get into an argument with Tyson that there were actually 116 lost pages. There's no more, no less. 116.
You can have that opinion, but you'd be wrong. I'm sorry.
Challenge accepted.
I kind of agree with Tyson. The response that I've gotten has been overwhelmingly positive, but I think. I hope it's just not people just trying to preserve our feelings. I love the feedback of, again, more women representation on the show would be really helpful. I think it's a great piece of advice. It's something that I hope that we can work into the show. But I think that if you have differing, there's gotta be a point where we've said something that ticks someone off and they're just kind of swallowing it. You know, like if you have strong opinions that differ from ours, I'd love to hear that for sure. But I have been really, again, like at the first person who commented on our NGL saying, hey, like, I love listening to you in the car. It's been great to go through, our journey of faith with you as a part of it. I was like, that is so great. That's so awesome. So if you have good feedback, bad, you know, constructive criticism or unconstructive criticism, more harsh burns about Pittsburgh. I welcome them.
Yes, me too. Bring it on.
Burgess will rebuke you and tear you down to the ground.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. But yeah, I think more feedback, the better. So, but again, I've never had any hate. Which maybe means we're not pushing the envelope enough. Is that really the comment that's going to end it? Really? All right. Thanks again for asking your awesome questions, and thanks again for listening. If you're enjoying our conversations every week on the show, and even if you're not, we'd love to hear from you as always. So consider leaving us a review and a rating wherever you listen, or share your favorite episode on your social media and tag us. We'd really appreciate it.
Please bless us to get home safely.